right, what's up, everybody? This is another episode of For What It's Worth with Wes Hoffman. Thank you so much for tuning in. I truly appreciate it. This episode is going to be with Mike Davenport of the Ataris. I am super stoked for this episode. I've been looking forward to this for a while. We've had it on the books for a minute, so I've definitely been looking forward to actually recording it and sharing it with you all. So Mike is the bass player for the Ataris. He also played in Versus the World and a few other bands as well. I have always been a big Ataris fan ever since I have been into music, ever since they've been around and I found out about them. So they've been a big influence on me and as a musician and in my upbringing in punk rock. So I'm super stoked for this episode. I also wanted to give a shout out to Versus the World, our friends out in California. That's kind of how this all came together. Was Mike used to be in Versus the World, and he was at our show that we played with them in LA a few months ago, and we've been exchanging messages, and I'm super stoked to have him on the podcast now. So big shout out to Versus the World. They are one of my favorite bands. They are by far going to be my most listened to band on Spotify this year. So definitely check them out as well. But yeah, enjoy this episode with Mike Davenport, and we will see you next week. We have an episode lined up with Nick Angelini from A Wilhelm Scream. Very, very stoked on that. My good friend Hez Retnew is going to be co-hosting that one with me. So stay tuned next week. But until then, enjoy this episode with Mike Davenport.
So how you doing? Nice to meet you.
I'm good, man. I'm good. I just want to let you know I already hit record.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, because I feel like if I don't, I wish I would have hit it right when we started, because then I would have got that little bit about the roadies.
Oh, you're good. I'm a talker, man. If you know anything about me, that's why I do the tours at the Punk Rock Museum.
Yeah, yeah. I saw that you're doing that. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I've already done some, and then we just booked Sublime and Pennywise are doing a 3-day residency at the MGM Grand, and we got day two. So I'm going to do tours on we got the Saturday night, which we're stoked about, and I'm going to do tours on Friday and Sunday. Friday, the Vandals got, and Sunday, Long Beach Dub All-Stars got.
Oh, hell yeah. That's awesome.
And then there's some opening bands, too. We're just like main support for each of those bands I mentioned are the main support. Vandals and Pennywise are all three nights.
Oh, wow. And that's with Sublime?
Sublime, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're managed, our new management, we've had new management for almost a year now, and it's the manager of Sublime, the new, with Jacob Noel.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of Sublime love.
That's awesome, man. That's super cool. So are you, do you kind of, like, as far as, like, the business side of, like,
I do it all in the Ataris now, again.
Okay, that's I thought,
and And I took that over when I came back to Chris. So the story is basically, I got in trouble, as you probably had heard before, and when I got in trouble, COVID hit as I was tying that up. So I moved back to, I decided to move to LA, and because COVID was going on and I couldn't play music. So I went back I always said, oh, I'm going to go back to school one of these days and finish my degree. Because when the Ataris met in the mid 90s, we were all going to college. I was at Santa Barbara City College. And I always said, oh, I'm going to go back to school one day and get my degree. Well, that just turned into years and years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then COVID hit. And I'm like, well, so I got accepted to Cal State Northridge, and I finished my degree. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. So it was while I moved down here to do that, I left Santa Barbara, and I moved down here, and then Chris Rowe, my singer, had gotten very sick in COVID and almost died.
I remember that, yeah.
And I told him he was not doing great. And I said, move out here by me. As a friend, I wasn't even really thinking about the band again because COVID was going on. We didn't know what was going on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like everybody.
Yeah.
And so I moved him out here, and he rented a bungalow not far, like literally 500 yards from my house. I have a house here that I live with my wife and my two teenagers. And so he moved out here, and then we started to formulate, you know, at the same time, as you know, pop punk is back, right?
Yeah, baby. Let's go.
And so that's all happened simultaneously, where I was telling him, you know, this is like the second rebirth. And not all music genres get that. I mean, hair metal never came back, yeah. Right? So I mean, people still go to hair metal shows, but it's not like it is, right? I mean, Green Day, Offspring, I always tell people, you know, Blink. I went last night. My son is 14 and obsessed with Pierce the Veil.
Yeah, you were telling me that.
And I went last night and saw the Phoenix show. I actually just got back this morning, and it's 22,000 emo kids screaming every song.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing when I look out, and they, you know, I toured in Versus. I toured Australia with Pierce the Veil, Sleeping with Sirens, and you know, they were a band almost as big as us at that time.
Yeah,
and so that was like 2014. To see them headlining amphitheaters and selling out Madison Square Garden, it's truly the time, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, so, that's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah, that's.
So Chris came out here, and we came up with a plan to do the band and do it, you know, like we did in the beginning. I pitched him the same thing. I was like, you know, because we've always been great friends, and I'd come back a couple times over the years, and I said, you know, we can do this. This is the time, and we can do it like we did in the beginning. You worry about the music. I'll handle the business, and it's been working. So I just found out today before this podcast that our new single has just cracked the top 50. It's like number 49 on the alternative charts.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
Car song. And it's the first time that we had a song chart since 2004, Saddest Song.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like 21 years later. It's crazy.
Yeah, that is a great song too, man.
Thank you. I definitely listened
to it when it came out. Like, and I've been coming back to it, but like the day it came out, I went on a really long walk and just listened to it like 20 times in a row.
Oh, that's cool.
Hold on. If you see me get up, it's because I have to let my dog in and out.
He acts crazy,
but I can still hear you and everything. So
yeah, you're good.
So tell me a little bit about so one thing that I love talking about on this podcast is about like kind of the business side of music. I love talking about songwriting and stuff too, but is that something that just kind of came natural to you, or did you seem like a person that like you easily connect with people, and that's a big part of
it. I do. I'm naturally a businessman. Yeah, I'm naturally a talker, a businessman. Chris is all art. So when we met in 95, Chris was 19. And he had been signed to Kung Fu on a demo tape, and they brought him out to Santa Barbara, where I was going to college, to play drums, to play with Derek Plord, the drummer for Lagwagon.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And so they brought Chris out there, and we met through, I was in a band with a girl singer, and he started dating this girl. And so we met, and it was naturally like he, after a little bit of time, he's like, he broke up with the girl. And I was still in the band with her. He's like, you want to do the band with me? I was like, man, I never thought you'd ask. Because his demo tape, the one that turned out to be Anywhere But Here, was amazing. It was otherworldly. And I was writing songs for my band and stuff, but I realized this guy is something. So, you know, I always was somebody that put on shows. When I was a kid and punk rock was starting, I put on shows in my hometown of Santa Maria, which is about an hour north of Santa Barbara. I put NoFX on way back in 1991. They were $300. They were expensive at the time. The Offspring were only $100.
Wow.
So I know all those guys from the early days of punk rock. We all played. I played in a band called Jungle Fish, and that I sang and played bass. And so I was always hustling, putting on these shows so that my band could play with these bands.
Yeah.
But it served me well years later, because, you know, not many years, but like four years later, all these bands are starting to get big, No Effects and The Offspring, and then I appear in the Antares, and all these guys, Dexter, who is actually Brian is Noodles and Dexter, yes. That's their real names, Brian and Brian and Fat Mike, and they're all like, oh my God, Mike, you did it, you got it here in another band, but we all got to the same place, you know.
That's so really cool.
Yeah, and just like Fat Mike, I was always about, you know, getting the business part is how we made things happen. And when we all saw Nirvana, it was Nirvana and then Green Day. But when we all, because we all played together, Green Day played those small shows with us too. But we all knew those bands, Nirvana too, were playing small. I saw them play in clubs, and we could hear the pop element, the Beatles element in Nirvana, the pop element in Green Day. So you could sort of feel that this was going to happen. Once Nirvana hit, Teen Spirit hit, it was on. We all thought, all of us thought, the sky's the limit. Now, NoFX fought it. You know, told MTV, don't play my song. They had a video for Linoleum, and they banned MTV from playing it. But you know, in the Antares, Chris and I definitely made the decision that we wanted to take the music as far as we could. Yeah. We wanted as many people to hear it as possible, and to do that at the time, you had to go to a major label.
Sure.
But yeah, the business, and I see you doing a lot of business with your band, and you're out here hustling, doing the podcast, and you do a lot of posting and things like that, and that's all part of it, right?
It is,
and a good example is Chris isn't really a hangout kind of guy, so he goes to the shows, he plays the show, and then off he goes, and I stick around. I just played on Friday in Sioux Falls with Bowling for Soup and Taking Back Sunday and Hawthorne Heights and many more on that show. It was a festival, and you know, I hang out and I make sure I talk to everybody and let everybody know, and that's what I see you do too. You have to do that, right? You have to let people know, you know, what's going on. Some of them asked me for advice. I had a couple of the bands asking me, because things are happening for us right now, you know.
Yeah.
Again, and they're wondering how that happened. Even some of these bands are like, I want to get back on the radio. Plain White Tees came to me and they asked me because they had a giant hit, right?
Oh, yeah.
And with Hey There, Delilah, but now they're back on Fearless, which is a great label, but Fearless isn't doing it for them as far as pushing them to radio or doing anything extra. So they were kind of wondering how we did that. And to be fair, we signed to our management company because we knew they do this thing that's sort of a all-encompassing deal. It's they do publicity, they do radio, they do management, they help get shows. Even though we have a booking agent, they help get shows, they work closely with our booking agent, and they also do a label. So you know, that's, it's called a 360 deal, and that's okay. really big right now, and a lot of bands are doing that, and a lot of management companies are. A perfect example of that is, and sadly he died recently, is Dave Shapiro. He did that with Pierce the Veil and Sleeping with Sirens, where he managed them, he booked them at the same time, and look where they are now.
Yeah,
they sold out Madison Square Garden now three nights at the Forum this week, which is unheard of for, I mean, even your biggest bands. Linkin Park's doing one night, you know what I mean, at the Forum.
Yeah.
Granted, they have a new singer and all that, but other gigantic bands I can think of are only doing one night at the Forum. And so it's pretty amazing to see.
Absolutely.
To see that kind of thing, because it's punk rock. I don't care what you say about the different genres of punk rock. Sleeping with Sirens, I watched the show last night, and I go see them a lot because my son is obsessed. Is that they are a punk rock band, and they come from punk rock. And it's even though as you know, there's all kinds of different versions of punk rock.
That's, yeah.
You know, it's good to see. They don't have any songs on the radio. Once in a while, they get played one of their covers. They did a cover of Karma Police. K-Rock plays it once in a while. But they do all this without radio.
Yeah. So did you guys, when you and Chris, when you first started this, the first, I'll call it the first phase of the Ataris.
That's right.
Did you guys know, like, was that an intention early on of like, hey, we want to get this music out to as many people as possible. We'll tour, we'll make connections, or did it start happening first and then you were like, you know, you rode the wave?
So I always tell people, for me, and I preach this a lot to other people too, is little goals become big goals. And then you set these little goals higher each time. And then they become outrageous because you're conquering these little goals. But our first little goals were, we want a tour, right? Like, sure. Like I'm sure yours was, or, yeah, or whatever. I want a tour. I want to have a release on Fat Records. That was one of our goals. I want to play the Hollywood Palladium, that kind of a thing. Or I want to play with the Vandals or NOFX or things like that. So you do these little goals, and then these goals set themselves. And once you get to these goals, then it becomes bigger goals. Well, I want to play, you know, the Forum, or I want to be on, you know, Jimmy Kimmel or something, sure, like that. Sure. You know what I mean? So you keep setting these goals for yourself, these little goals, but they become this big giant goal. And that's sort of how we did it. You know, it wasn't with the intention, especially in the beginning. We just were kind of caught up. Like, I met Chris, he had a record deal, and we're just like, let's do this. And we started booking shows. We took the Maximum Rock and Roll, had an issue. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a magazine before the internet and all that stuff. And they were out of San Francisco, and they had it one issue a year. We both read Maximum Rock and Roll because it had scene reports. So you could see people would write in from, you know, where I'm from, Central Coast of California, where Chris is from, Indianapolis, Indiana. They would write St. Louis, where you're from.
Sure.
They would write scene reports, and then you would see what's going on in that town and through this magazine. And then at once a year, they published a thing called Book Your Own Fucking Life.
Yes,
and
I remember that.
Yeah, and you would go through there, and Chris and I would start booking tours based on where they were. And since we had the cred of being on the Vandals label, that's where we were signed, we would try to get $200 and we'd go anywhere. And we would book these tours for $200 a night. Gas was cheaper and stuff like that then.
Yeah.
But we would try to book for $200 a night. We'd go out for 90 days in the van.
Wow.
And sleep in the van, sleep on the side of the road, sleep on, you know. And we called those tours basements, backyards, BFW halls. And we did those. And that was before we were playing bars, you know. And most bars didn't want us in there, stuff like that. So, but that's how we started. And it's funny, as we started then at the same time, Chris was writing a new batch of songs that would become Blue Skies. And during that time is when Fat Mike heard, because we talked Joey Cape, who's also from Santa Barbara, into producing that record, Blue Skies, which we did in Santa Barbara. And Joey Cape showed it to Fat Mike, and he heard San Dimas. Once Fat Mike heard San Dimas, he called Escalante. He said, I know these guys are signed to you, but he said, this song's so good, I want it on one of my Fat compilations. So he put it on the fourth one, The Life in the Fat Lane. And it's funny, we were playing these Book Your Own tours, and all of a sudden that came out, and we saw just our shows start to blow apart. So,
yeah.
And then we noticed, then all of a sudden, other people are calling us, other bands, No Use for a Name and Good Riddance, and they're calling us and they're going, hey, you want to open my tour? So that's basically how that goes, you know.
Yeah.
Is San Dimas was, there was two of those in our career, three now if you count Car Song. We're noticing it with Car Song too. But San Dimas did that, and then Boys of Summer was the next level of that when we when we started playing that song, even before it was out on anything, we played it as a couple shows, and we could tell. You could just tell. We could tell with San Dimas. We'd play San Dimas and the reaction. And the same goes with Car Song. We just started playing that in Europe on this last trip, and the reaction is just crazy, even to people that haven't heard it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, so absolutely.
That's how that stuff goes, and that's kind of where our evolution came from in these different levels.
I'd love to hear that, man, because that makes me feel like I'm a little bit on the right track, because, you know, I've kind of like what you said, like we first did a weekender, and then I was like, oh, we did one show out of town and one show at home. Like, we can do three shows on the road, and,
yeah,
you know, we can go out to the West Coast, and we can... You know, I see bands, they fly out. There's a band called Keep Flying. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but...
Yeah, they're booked by the same person that books us, TKO.
Okay, yeah. You know, they I used to see them, like, they would fly in somewhere and do a run of shows and then fly home, and we've done that several times now, and I'm like, it's not... If they're doing it, like, we should be able to do it. You know what I mean?
I always tell people... You got to take chances, right? I knew so many great bands, great musicians that were afraid to take that chance, right? You don't take that chance, it's never gonna pay off. You got to take risks, and sometimes you fail. We've had terrible tours and terrible breakdowns in the van, and yeah, stranded in places, and canceled shows and all that shit, right? But if you don't take those chances, nothing's gonna ever happen.
Yes.
So
yes.
You gotta take the chance. You gotta get in the van, you know, and do those things. And it's harder the older we get, right? It's harder. A lot of people have kids and stuff like that, and it keeps you from going so crazy like that. But you know, you gotta do it.
Yeah.
If you want it, you got to do it.
Absolutely.
No one's gonna. I would have never heard of you had you not gone out and done that stuff with Verses and stuff like that. So, and now I see you all over the place. So, you know, that's how that rolls, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, dude, and when we did that tour on the West Coast, we met so many cool people. I met you. Well, I didn't get to meet you at the show, but we met Cameron Webb, who produced Verses. I'm trying to think of who else. Now, of course, I'm drawing him. Oh, Mark. I think Mark DeSantis, who did all the
Marco.
Yeah, yeah, he did all the artwork for like NoFX and Pulley and all that. And
Yeah.
And, you know, we've just met so many cool people on that tour, and we would have never you know, gotten close with the guys in Verses and Counterpunch and Taken Days. We knew them before, but it was just such a great time to, you know, that helped that we knew them a little bit more, you know.
Well, so. And they're doing what you're doing. I see them around doing the same stuff, and that's how it happens. I see them on shows over here, and you got to keep doing that, and then that's how you build, right? Because this is the time. There's punk rock has its ebb and flows over time, and it had a peak in like 2005, 2006, and then it slowed down a little for about 5 years, and then it slowly built back up again. And maybe it'll stay huge forever, or maybe it'll ebb down a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was that time where even Blink was playing House of the Blues, and Green Day was coming down to smaller venues, and now they're all back at stadiums.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and amphitheaters and stuff.
Yeah.
So I do have a question. I put out something on Instagram, and I appreciate you resharing it. I ask people if they have questions for my guests, and I got a lot of questions about why do you like the jazz bass over other bass models?
Oh, I like that.
So I'm just lumping it all into one. There were some specific questions, but yeah.
I'm all about the jazz bass. That's all I've ever played. I did play a Music Man. In the very beginning of the Ataris, I had a Peavey because we were broke, and that we didn't know any better. And then we went on tour with MXPX. That was our first real tour.
Oh, I love MXPX.
And, yeah, we went, and still to this day, you know, we'll be in St. Louis with them coming up in, I think it's this November.
Okay.
November.
Okay,
yeah,
hell
yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'll see you out there. I'll put you on the guest list. It'll be great.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I would ask you to play, but we only do us two.
Oh, okay.
That's all
okay.
We do. Yeah, we don't do opening bands. We just do us two. That's sort of our thing.
You play longer sets that way.
Yeah, we do that, and we just do this, we call it team-ups. And we've been doing a lot of those. That's another business thing that we do is we do those with MXPX, we do those with Alien Ant Farm. And so there are two different types of team-ups. You know, we do the Boys of Summer Smooth Criminal thing with them, and then with MXPX, we do our punk rock thing.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. Team-ups are really great because you can go in and out. You can share everything, gear, everything like that. And we don't like to tour like we did as kids. Both bands, both of us were crazy as kids, like 250 shows a year. And now we try, as all of us have families and stuff like that, to do these like 2, 3, 4 days at a time. And then they go home and do 2, 3, 4 days. But I play the jazz bass because first Mike Herrera gave me my first real good bass. We were on tour. He saw me playing the PVs. Like, you can't play that. I'm sponsored by Music Man, and I have a ton of these things. So he gave me a Music Man, and I really liked it. But I don't like active pickups, so that's why I jumped away from the Music Man. And I started messing around with my sound. I started getting serious at that time of what we sound like. That was around End Is Forever.
Okay.
And End Is Forever is when we really, you know, started caring about like songwriting and what we sounded like, which rolled into Astoria. And at that time, I really wanted a sound, right? And I bought my first jazz bass, and I fell in love right then. And then the one that I still play to this day, I got that I played on Astoria and all of the first three verses records. So it's on Astoria and the first three verses records, the three that I play on in verses, is it's a 62 reissue of early 90s. Okay. And I just really like the 62 neck. It's really small, thin neck, so it's easy to get your hands around and play all the notes. And it just sounds great. It's just it has you know, just the regular dual humbucker pickups, and it's really, really great sounding. So yeah, you know, not a bunch of knobs. Two knobs, you know what I mean? And
simple,
no switches,
setup.
Nothing like that. Just straight ahead rock and roll. So you know, and over the years I've gone through a lot of amps. I do love Orange a lot, and I do play it. We don't mostly take our gear out. We do have gear, right? But right. Mostly we only bring our heads. And the gear is provided for us. We do that in our contracts now. So then you're not hauling gear around. So, but at home here, I have an Orange stack, but it's in two. It's not an 810. It's a 115 and 410s. And I stack those on top of each other. And then I've moved to the Fender Bassman, the hybrid. And it's like the lightest amp. It's got two tubes on one side and it's solid state on the other. So it's like the best of both.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's so cool. But the crazy thing is how light it is. It's like the lightest thing I've ever felt. The most ripping sound ever. So that Fender Bassman with the Orange cabs, that's and the and my jazz bass. That's, and I have two jazz basses. I have an early 2000s and then the 90s, which is a 62 reissue. So okay. I go back and forth. I just took the 2000 one to the early 2000s one on my European tour, and I kind of fell in love with it again. And so I do that. I go back and forth. I left the other one at home because I didn't want to fly with it. I play that on all my records and stuff. I was like, I don't want to fly with it just in case it gets lost or something like that. So I took that one, and then I found myself bringing that one on the next couple shows that we just did because I'm like, ooh, I really like this one too. So I go back and forth. But they both exactly look exactly alike. I'm sure that most people see me play. They couldn't tell the difference. The only reason I can tell is that one of them is beat up for all the years when we used to trash our gear, which we used to do in the early days of the Ataris. I'd rub it on the monitors and stuff like that. So
that's funny. That's awesome. Yeah. Dude, I'd love to hear a little bit about your time with Versus the World. I am a huge, of course, you know, we toured with them, and I'm a huge fan of their music. And I know that you were a big part of that. You just said, you know, you played on the first three records, and
it's my band. How's that? It's 100% my band. It was my idea, and I crew to Donald because Donald worked in the Atari's record store. I got us our first contract at Kung Fu, and it was my way of. So we had done Astoria in the Atari's, and Chris started writing Welcome the Night. And we had been in a band 12 years together at that time, and Kid, our drummer, and me and Chris, we'd gone through a lot of stuff. And it's just kind of, we all needed a break. There was no, like, fuck you, I quit. There's never any of that. I just started, came up with this idea to Donald, hey, let's do a band. And we called it, I called it Pen Cap Chew at first, which is the name of my publishing company. If you look on the Atari's records, you'll see, okay. And Versus Records, Pen Cap Chew Music. It's a Nirvana nod. It was one of Nirvana's early names that they changed. So I said, let's do this band. So me and Donald started doing this band. And we played at South by Southwest, and Joe Escalante showed up, and he's like, "I'll put out your record like that. We should do a deal." So then I told Donald, "This is serious. We kind of fired all the guys that we had, and it just me and Donald grabbed the drummer for this band, Antifreeze, that's still in the business. He works for the Offspring now as their drum tech, and Billy Idol is his drum tech. This guy Trevor, he's great, oh, wow. And this other guitar player from Santa Barbara, and we went to my producer, which is my right hand. He's worked on every Atari record and the first three Versus records. Cameron Webb is not part of my Versus the World.
Sure.
But this guy's name's Tom Flowers, and he won a Grammy working with Steve Perry on his solo record. This guy's a genius, and he's like the fifth member of Versus the World on the first three records. And so Tom produced that record, and it was heavier. My whole intention was to go different than I told Donald I didn't want to be in a pop punk band or a band that where Chris went with Welcome the Night, which was really indie rock, right?
Sure.
I wanted to do Rise Against, which was what I had in my head. Rise Against was coming up. I liked what they were doing, and so that's my concept for the first Versus the World record. And I think we got pretty close.
Yeah, man. And I definitely hear that.
Yeah, and it turned out great. I loved it. We No Use for a Name. Tony Sly, who I'd known many years through the Atari's had toured with No Use, really liked the Versus record. So he basically took us out for 2 years. Donald and I and the guys went. We did Warped Tour 2005. We went to Japan, to Europe. We did a No Use for a Name Suicide Machines. We were gone 2 years, and then we came home from that, like 2007, and it was like punk had kind of died then. It was kind of weird. Nobody was coming to the shows, so we disbanded for a couple years, and then that's when I called Donald back again after I saw things starting to percolate a little bit. It was like 2010, and that's when I redid the lineup. I asked Chris Flippin. To come over, who's been my lifelong friend. We grew up, we're the same age, we grew up together. Lagwagon, the Atari's toured a lot together. And so I asked Chris to come in the band, and then we got Donald's drummer at the time. Donald was playing in another band that was more little country-ish kind of thing. And so we kind of combined both. I had Chris and this side project I was doing, and Donald took his drummer, who's my great friend to this day. He helps out at the Atari's now, actually. This guy, Brian Charlson. And so we reformed and with us four, and that's when we did Drink, Sing, Live, Love. Same guy, Tom Flowers, did it, which was much more rocking, like a rock and roll record, because Flip is doing these insane solos, right? And Donald's gotten better playing in that country band I told you about. It was called Crooks and Liars. And so all of that is infused in that right there. And then Flip goes in and out with Lagwagon, so I needed another guitar player. And that's when I brought Tony in.
Yeah.
And so I brought Tony in.
I love Tony.
Tony played on the next record, which is Drink, Sing, Live, is Homesick, Roadsick. So, okay. And we did massive touring. And the cool thing is I could bring people in and out all the time. We had Gavin from Senses Fail come in and out. And we had Mike Woods come in and out. So we were always like mixing and matching. The only person that had to be there all the time was Donald.
right. Yeah.
I told Donald that, and I was always. I was in charge of the business for that band, and we did really well, really super well. So, but once COVID hit and all that stuff, the band reset, and Tony took over. And I told them from the beginning at that time, my goal is 100% Ataris. I'm not gonna, I want to go back and give my full commitment. And you know, what's funny is we did a reunion tour of the Ataris in 2014, and Versus opened that tour. And so I did double duty every single night. I played in the opening band and the headlining band. So it was awesome. We had a blast, but once COVID hit and Tony and Donald wrote that new record,
the Bastards whatever, Live Forever.
Yeah. Bastards Live Forever. It was apparent to me. Tony basically brought in his band, which was Pat and Josh. And so, you know, I knew then. I always give Donald shit. I was kicked out of my own band. So I always tell Donald that. He gets pissed off. Oh, you weren't kicked out and stuff. And it wasn't like that either, right?
But sure.
But I own the first three records, so I like them to do great. I tell them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
keep playing, keep touring. I like this stuff.
Yeah, so. They are great, and they're great guys, and I love. I haven't listened to much to the first two, but Homesick Roadsick. I love that.
It's a great record.
Love that record.
It's what that and Astoria are like my two proudest moments in music. That's that good of a record to me, and that's Tom Flowers again does that record.
Yeah,
and helped us hone all of those songs. And the drummer for that and Drink, Sing, Live, Love, Brian Charlson, still like one of my best friends to this day. We made an amazing rhythm section, and he is. He left to do Dark Horse Coffee. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but
Dark Horse is a
gigantic like punk rock coffee shop. But Brian just came over to Europe with us, and he did all of our like stage managing and stuff for the Ataris.
That's awesome.
And stuff like that, yeah. That's so cool. him and Kid, my drummer, they get along great, and it's awesome to be able to hang out with my two favorite drummers.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, this has been awesome, man. I thank you so much. I've got 3 minutes left. It's like a running joke here on that I haven't upgraded my Zoom yet.
Yeah, you're good.
But it also keeps me from like not letting this go for 3 hours.
Yeah, my buddy does the same thing. Same thing. So.
Yeah, any parting words or anything that you guys...
No, I'm going to be doing tours at the Punk Rock Museum around the Sublime shows, which is if you want to come out to Vegas, the best time will be August 15th, 16th, 17th. Please come out. We play the 16th, but the 15th and the 17th, I'll be doing tours at the Punk Rock Museum.
Hell yeah.
And the two Vandals guys will be doing them the day I play. So Joe and Warren. And so, and then we have lots of stuff coming up, Riot Fest in Chicago and Aftershock Festival in Sacramento, and lots of MXPX team ups, and yeah, man, big stuff.
Awesome, man.
New album next year in March.
Oh, hell yeah. I can't wait for it, man. I can't wait. And yeah, dude, thank you. I mean, I could talk to you forever, and I know this won't be the last time we cross paths.
That's cool.
I'll look forward to seeing you in St. Louis.
I'll see you in St. Louis.
Yeah, absolutely, brother.
All right, cool. Take care, man.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye. Have a good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.